640 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Biden holds a news conference at the close of tomorrow's NATO summit. He'll likely be peppered with questions about the viability of his campaign to try to shore up the... And then CBS's Michael Toscano reports that it comes amid signs of softening support on Capitol Hill.
Well, Peter Welch is the first Senate Democrat explicitly calling on President Biden to withdraw from the race. About half a dozen others have expressed doubts Biden can win, but stop short of telling him to exit, including Connecticut's Richard Blumenthal.
And I'm going to continue to raise concerns.
With at least nine House members calling on Biden to step aside, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi startled many by telling MSNBC, quote, it's up to the president to decide if he's going to run. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries will take Democratic members' private comments to the president on Friday. Michael Toscano, CBS News, Washington.
NATO Secretary General says an alliance declaration stating that Ukraine's path to NATO is irreversible shows that the alliance is committed to Kyiv joining its ranks. Max Bergman at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
Irreversible, I think, shows that Ukraine is on track to join the West, to join the European Union and NATO. And I think it's an important signal, not just to Moscow, but I think to the rest of the world as well.
For 5 days, it has been a record-breaking 115 degrees or greater in Las Vegas and hurricane-ravaged Houston. It's hot and power is still out for many. CBS's Omar Villafranca.
In the Lone Star State, hundreds of cars lined up for several blocks to pick up needed supplies. The heat index hit 100 degrees in Houston, where residents are rushing to distribution centers for food, water, and ice.
We have no food right now, nothing, zero.
Thruster problems on Boeing Starliner spacecraft is why two astronauts are at the International Space Station 3 weeks longer than planned. Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams say they will return home once thruster testing on Earth is completed. CBS News space consultant Bill Harwood.
You have to keep in mind that this is the first piloted flight of the Starliner. They've never had it up with people during a full-up mission. And so they're really kind of trying to wring it out. They think the thrusters will actually work fine.
The FAA is investigating an incident in the sky above an airport in Syracuse, New York. An American Airlines flight was cleared by air traffic control to land at Syracuse Hancock Airport while a Delta flight was taking off. Police dashcam video appears to show the two jetliners on a collision course. CBS News transportation safety analyst Robert Sumwalt.
What this really is, in the official vernacular, is this is a loss of standard separation, meaning basically that two airplanes should not be this close together.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Protesters are out with their plans for a parade near the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. Here's Stuart J. Waddles.
The Coalition to March on the RNC 2024 will begin their demonstration at Red Arrow Park, crossing the Milwaukee River four times and then entering the soft security zone. Organizers say the march, scheduled for noon on Monday, aims to bring protesters as close as legally possible to the convention while respecting court-ordered boundaries. I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Expanded Amtrak service in Wisconsin is a hit with passengers. More than 18,500 people rode the Borealis trains between St. Paul and Chicago during its first month. That's about 300 passengers on each trip. Wisconsin's transportation secretary calls the data promising. That's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers get clobbered at home. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It was one of the worst losses of the year. The Pirates beat the Brewers 12-2. Pittsburgh with five home runs in the game, including a grand slam by the Pirates catcher, Joey Bart, in front of over 26,000 fans at American Family Field. Manager Pat Murphy, after the debacle.
We haven't had one of those games in a while, especially at home. We've been in every single game. I bragged everybody about being in 85 of 90 games. But credit to the Pirates, they did a great job. Took us out of it. Not going to win a lot of games or five or six hits.
The two teams playing again tonight. Closer Devin Williams, making progress, throwing to live batters during warm-ups. He's coming back from stress fracture. fractures in his back. NBA, the Bucks have added former Detroit Pistons guard Stanley Umude, 6'6", appeared in 28 games for Detroit. Racing, Brad Mueller, named the winner at the Slinger Nationals early this morning after Andrew Morrissey disqualified because his car did not meet standard measurements. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A stray evening storm otherwise clearing tonight and lows in the low 60s. Partly cloudy for tomorrow, a high in the mid-70s. Heating up as we look towards the end of the week, sunny and near 80 on Friday, mid-80s to 90 for the weekend, slight storm chance. It's 71 right now.
Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we talk all things sports with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter J.R. Radcliffe. Weather and wine with Brittany Merlot as we head into a steamy week. Join us.
Mattenair on air, weekday mornings at 10. The Shaw, W-A-U-K.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cup, Henry Cup, dude.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local and national Native news and events. As you know, Tujunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by the City of Minneapolis. Native Roots Radio and AM 950 present today's episode of Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations with guest host Christine McDonald.
Hey, we always look forward to hosting these monthly conversations in partnership with the City of Minneapolis, and we discuss American Indian relations with the biggest city here in Minneapolis. And let's take it away. Here's our guest host, Christine McDonald, with today's guest. Hoa.
Thank you, Robert. So, Buju, Ogodaki, Gabuik, Indijnakas, Ajijak, Nundundem. I am Christine McDonald. I'm the American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. Thank you for joining us today. One of the things I was excited about using this platform for was introducing public officials that serve our community. So today we are going to have on the Minneapolis Health Commissioner, Damone Chaplin, and we are also going to be having a conversation with the Metro Transit Police Chief, Ernest Morales III. We are going to start our conversation with the Commissioner of Health, Damone Chaplin. Thank you for joining us. Can you tell us about yourself and what you do as the Commissioner of the Minneapolis Health Department?
Yeah, thank you, Christine. First of all, thank you for inviting me for this platform, giving me an opportunity to connect with the community. So I am from Massachusetts. Born and raised, I've been here for a little bit over a year, so I'm actually considered a transplant now. I can no longer use the new title. I've been in public health for a little over 25 years. Most of my career has been working in urban communities, a little bit in rural. And I grew up, really impoverished circumstances. And so a lot of that experience, that lived experience, comes out in the work that I do. And I bring that with me everywhere I go. And so it really helps to keep me grounded and keep me connected to the mission of public health. And so prior to coming to Minneapolis, I was the health director for the New Bedford Health Department in New Bedford, Massachusetts. And then prior to that, I served as the regional director for the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. And so what really drove me to public health, in 2004, my father passed away of stomach cancer. And then in 2015, my mother passed away, both of them below the age of 65, and my father being 54. really kind of put a spotlight on the impact of health, of public health, on an individual's life and life expectancy. And that kind of drew me, I'm going to say not drew me to, but kind of created a different platform for me to look at my own life and my family's life and all the social determinants of health. And so I really began to think about the work that I was doing differently, more as a calling than a career. It became, it helped me connect to my passion and my purpose. And so here in Minneapolis, I lead a organization, multi-million dollar organization or department with roughly about 160 staff, six divisions and many programs. All those programs serving everything from maternal and child health all the way up to opioids and substance misuse. And so we collaborate with other partners within our division, regulatory services, community planning and economic development, and then arts and culture. And so, I mean, among all of the other departments within the city, but those are the ones that are closest within our division.
Mm-hmm. Wow, a year has already gone by. You experienced our winters here, our one winter so far. I'm happy to have you here. I appreciate how you've taken an interest in the American Indian community. And we went on a community health walk through like Little Earth and Franklin Avenue. So I really appreciate that interest. What drew you to Minneapolis?
Yeah, it's alignment of vision. When I came here, when I was recruited to come here and I met with the mayor, we sat down and we talked. And it was my past experiences, particularly around substance misuse and equity and homelessness, that kind of drew me to Minneapolis. And I felt as though my experiences and expertise, I could help the mayor and the city. They could benefit from those experiences. And so that's what drew me here. But what keeps me here is the relationships that I'm developing with people like yourself and the indigenous community and the African-American community, all the other communities that are here. They really have embraced me. They really have given me an opportunity to kind of share my experiences. And it really has been a beautiful experience thus far. So again, inviting me to shows like this, having an opportunity to speak, it really is, it's very helpful. So thank you.
Thank you. What are you looking to focus on in your role as the health commissioner for the city?
Yeah, the three areas right now that we're focused on for health department is climate legacy. Obviously, many people have heard about that, the climate legacy initiative. Obviously working with folks like Chief Morales and MPD and Rec Services around substance misuse and then also health equity. And so really looking at ways that we can flatten the health disparities in many of our at-risk communities.
Can you tell us more about your experience working with substance use and opioid prevention? That's a huge issue in our community.
Yeah, prior to coming to Minneapolis, I served on the opioid response committee with the state government in Massachusetts. And also co-chaired the opioid task force in New Bedford. And so for both of those experiences, you know, I learned quickly about government alignment, the importance of being aligned in the work that you do. But also what was most important is really connecting with the people with lived experiences. Mm-hmm. I learned the most about the work that I was doing from the folks who were actually in the throes of addiction. And so I bring those same experiences here, and I'm hearing similar conversations here as I talk to folks. As you know, Christine, I do a lot of walking and I bump into a lot of people and I learn a lot from just engaging with folks as I'm walking.
So how is the city working to help people struggling with the addiction and help their families?
So you've seen most recently, I can say we just had the 24/7 vending machine at Station 21. We have provided grants to communities for culturally specific treatment and treatment for youth. And then we are working on developing a strategic plan for the opioid settlement dollars. And so that plan is very close to being completed. And I want to thank the community for those folks who participated in helping us kind of get our information and our strategies in alignment.
Okay, thank you. We are going to end the segment and we'll be right back. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex, recording sexual acts without permission, hurting someone because of their sexual orientation, raping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger, purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Hi, this is Philip Anthony, the host of the Downright Upright Show, which airs every Saturday at 5 p.m. I interview many interesting Minnesotans and listen to their ideas on how they plan to improve the lives of members of the LGBTQ community and our wider Minnesota community, and then to hear their opinions on current events. Remember, you could listen to the Downright Upright Show with Philip Anthony every Saturday at 5 p.m. on radio or wherever you listen to podcasts. So come and join me and continue being fantabulous.
You may have seen a certain truck in videos being shared on social media. How about the truth? I have yet to see any video of that truck outperforming the Toyota Sienna from Rudy Luther Toyota. I've driven Sienna since 2006. They handle the highways great, handle back roads, and handle 3 inches of snow a lot easier than the so-called super truck. Plus, my Sienna Hybrid is super fuel efficient, tows great, has enough room for tons of gear, and doesn't look like it was drawn by a six-year-old. Sienna wins! Test drive the top of its class Sienna today at Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis AIR, American Indian Relations, and here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Welcome back. We are in conversation with Minneapolis Health Commissioner Damone Taplin. He was telling us about some of the things that are being offered around addiction and supporting individuals and their families. Damone, you mentioned a vending machine for Narcan. Can you tell us a little bit again about where that's at, if there's a cost to use it, how people access it?
Yeah, the Narcan vending machine is at Fire Station 21, right off the intersection of Minnehaha Avenue and 38th Street. The fire station's vending machine offers, a lifeline for those folks who are in addiction. It's very simple. It's free to the community. It's available 24/7. All you have to do is push a button, and you're able to get access to life-saving Narcan. Each box has two doses inside of it, and I think there's roughly about 100 boxes within the vending machine. And so it's the first that we're piloting this project, and we're hoping to put one on the north side and a few other locations within the city around a very short period. And so we'll see how this goes, but the sooner we can get life-saving tools in the hands of folks who need it, the better off we'll be. We can't get to long-term recovery if people aren't breathing, and so we have to do all we can to keep people alive long enough to get to recovery.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Thank you. Are there additional services or programs that the city has to address substance use in the opioid crisis?
Yeah, many of the services that are in the city are coordinated through the county, but through the health department, again, we provide a number of needle pickup. We've had a grant from needle pickup. We also have a first step program that we've kind of developed. We're hoping to have our medical mobile unit up and running this summer, which will be pretty exciting for many folks that will be able to provide treatment in the field and also sanitation services for folks as well. And then addition, as I previously mentioned, the grants that we provided for culture specific treatment and also for youth. We wanna make sure that we're engaging with youth, and we're actually exploring additional opportunities within our school-based clinics of how we can engage with high school students who may be struggling with addiction issues as well.
That mobile unit, is that going to be city employees, city staff, or is that going to be Okay, great.
So it's going to be city-owned, city employees. Keeping our fingers crossed, if we can get this thing up and running before the end of the summer, that would be great. And we'll be able to kind of go to those areas within the neighborhoods that need those services the most.
Mm-hmm. Can you say more about the settlement dollars that the city's getting, where they came from, and how the city is going to be allocated those funds?
Yeah, so we received, the city is scheduled to receive about $18 million over the next 18 years. The funding is front loaded, so you get a larger amount of the funding in the first couple of years, and then it tapers off over the next several years, 16 or so years. And so we're scheduled to receive about $1 million a year for the next 18 years. We are in the process of finishing up a strategic plan for the spending of those dollars. And the plan hasn't been completed yet, but with looking at prevention and treatment. But then also one of the things that we're really focusing on is government alignment. Mm-hmm. And how does the state and county and local health departments work best together around a specific issue, and really exploring this idea of collective impact. And so that's really going to be helpful. We're hearing that from the community. They're asking, you know, they're urging us. They need help. They need help now. And they want us to provide the greatest amount of service possible to communities. And so we heard that last night yesterday at the meeting. I hear them loud and clear, and I'm doing everything I can to make sure that we have as much resources available to really have an impact on it. I think we can do this. I really do believe we can get those folks in need of services, the services that they need at the time that they need it, when they need it. I think it can be done. I believe it can be done. It's a matter of us really coordinating and working together and being very focused and intentional about outcomes.
Mm-hmm. We have one way of helping to do that, and the city and the county have both been participants in the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors opioid and unsheltered meetings, where we have a lot of the conversations where we have a community identified solutions. So we do appreciate that participation from the city, your city staff, as well as county staff. Mm-hmm. So they're hearing firsthand from our community, the American Indian community in Minneapolis, on ways that they feel would best have those monies be affected in serving our families and our individuals that are suffering with the substance use and the opioid use. So we look forward to continuing to see your staff at those meetings.
Yep.
Thank you. How does this work intersect with the mission of improving racial equity and access to healthcare and health-related outcomes?
Yeah, it's very simple. There are health disparities in each area, each one of these areas that we've talked about, whether it's substance misuse, whether it's climate legacy. You're seeing the health disparities play out. You know, I don't have to give you a history of the country, but we have a system of structural racism that really plays out in our health system. And we're seeing that play out in all of these other areas as well. And so for me, it's important that we provide the greatest amount of services to the folks who need it the most. And so we see that with our Native American communities. We see that with our African American communities. We see that with our Latino communities. And so it's really important that we be very intentional about providing those communities and those areas of those neighborhoods of need with the resources that they need, and not waiting for it, but now. The issue is now. If you have a family member who is struggling with addiction, or who is struggling with homelessness, or mental health, when they hurt, you hurt. And so I feel that. I have family members who are in long-term recovery. I know what it's like. I know what it's like to be afraid to be around someone who has a mental health condition that's not being treated. And so I get it. And so my job right now is to put these dollars to use as soon as possible, but also to be accountable for how those dollars get put to use. And so we're working very hard to be very smart, but also to be very impactful. And so we're looking forward to the future.
Yeah, I really appreciate hearing that. A lot of times in the meetings that I'm in with government entities, it's the conversation usually leads towards housing being the issue. And I can't stress enough, like in our community, how much we talk about mental health and historical trauma really being the root problem of the substance use disorders that we've seen throughout our history. Before at one time it was alcoholism was the main issue, and now it's moved into this bizarre array of opioids, and now I don't even know what you categorize the trink, those types of drugs as. You did mention the Climate Legacy Initiative. I find that an exciting piece of the work that your department is doing as well. Can you tell us more about what the Climate Legacy Initiative is?
Yeah, that project and program, the initiative is being led by Deputy Commissioner Patrick Hanlon. At a high level, this initiative seeks to significantly reduce greenhouse gas emissions and make Minneapolis carbon neutral by 2050, while simultaneously becoming a nationwide leader in green careers. And so one of our other directors, Marquita Keys, she's also leading our Green Careers Exploration Program, which is a really exciting program. It's getting folks in non-traditional communities excited about green careers and giving them a first crack at kind of working in an emerging industry. And so that's really exciting and very interested. And I'm so happy that they're here in the health department and I can support them. At the community level, it provides important resources to improve the lives of our communities, specifically with a focus on our green zones, our environmental justice neighborhoods, and many of our other underserved communities. So we are focused on increasing our urban tree canopy, which reduces the temperature within neighborhoods and our green zones by offering free trees to residents and low-cost trees to businesses. We're building resiliency hubs at the Sabathany Community Center, at the Minneapolis American Indian Center, and in North Minneapolis at the Minneapolis Schools Nutrition Center. And so the city offers weatherization programs to improve the energy efficiency and comfort of community members' homes, owner-occupied rentals, with different funding support models based on income and geography. So we're doing a lot with this program, first in the nation in a lot of ways, and the way that we're approaching this. And I'm really excited about the years to come.
We briefly touched on mental health. Can you let us know how people can access mental health care in Minneapolis?
Yep, our website provides an extensive list of mental health resources, crisis, and support.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for Matinee on Air.
CBS News Brief. One Democratic senator and at least 9 Democratic House members call on President Biden to drop out of the election. And former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi tells MSNBC,
it's up to the president to decide if he is going to run. We're all encouraging him to make that decision because time is running short.
Military assistance to Ukraine and having it become a member tops the agenda at the NATO summit in D.C. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg.
We have agreed that 40 billion euros is a minimum baseline within the next year and to ensure sustainable funding for Ukraine to prevail.
CBS News space consultant Bill Harwood says thruster testing is taking place on Earth to send info back to the two astronauts at the International Space Station, who are trying to return to Earth on Boeing Starliner spacecraft.
They're both confident that they've got a safe vehicle, and I think we have to take them at their word for that. We'll have to wait and see how the testing comes out.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The former warden at the Waupun State Prison is waiving his preliminary hearing. Randall Hepp's lawyer is also withdrawing a motion to have a felony charge of misconduct dismissed. Eight other former prison employees also face charges for allegedly mistreating inmates. Marriage equality is making gay people happier and healthier. That's according to a new study from UCLA. Abby Goldberg is a psychology professor who says same-sex relationships are stronger and more secure.
They have access to health insurance. They are physically and mentally healthier. They're able to share the challenges and work of raising children.
The same study finds 80% of same-sex couples are concerned politicians and courts could take their rights away. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. In Let It Go news, actress Minnie Driver says marrying Josh Brolin would have been the biggest mistake of her life. This comes just 23 short years after they were engaged for 5 months back in 2001. Entertainment Weekly says Driver's relationship issues stem from the actress finding out at age 12 that her father was secretly married to another woman and had an entirely different family. Sounds like Brolin is the one who sidestepped that landmine. In a related story, I'm thrilled I never married my seventh grade girlfriend, Penelope. David Duchovny says he auditioned for all three of the male lead roles on the show Full House. On his Fail Better podcast, the X-Files and Californication star said he thought for sure he would get one of the roles and it would change his life. After being completely shut out, Duchovny talked producers into letting him read for the role of Michelle Tanner, but was beat out by the Olsen twins. It's a tough business. I mean, even if he had a twin. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A stray evening storm otherwise clearing tonight and lows in the low 60s. Partly cloudy for tomorrow, a high in the mid-70s. Heating up as we look towards the end of the week, sunny and near 80 on Friday, mid-80s to 90 for the weekend, slight storm chance. It's 71 right now.
With a little financial support from the Wisconsin Chairs Child Care Subsidy Program, more is possible. You can focus on work, continue your education, and take advantage of opportunities that make your family stronger. Best of all, you can give your child a great start with the high-quality care they deserve. What's your more? Learn how you can get help paying for childcare by visiting wishares.wi.gov today.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
When President Biden wanted to set the record straight, he called Civic Media Network's Earl Ingram Show.
I screwed up. I made a mistake. That's 90 minutes on stage. Look at what I've done in 3.5 years.
Hear the complete conversation now at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations. And here is our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Thank you. Welcome back. Our next guest today joins us from the Metro Transit Police Department. We have Chief Ernest Morales III. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Christine. I appreciate being a guest and having this platform to connect with our audience.
Yeah, it's so nice to see you. Can you tell us about yourself and what you do as the chief of the Metro Transit Police?
Sure. So I grew up in New York, Lower East Side, Manhattan. I grew up during the 1980s, the crack epidemic. And unfortunately, I grew up in a single family home to a drug addicted mom in the projects. The reason why I share that with you is September of this past year, projects, you know, they're supposed to be temporary homes, temporary housing. Unfortunately, that apartment's been in my life over 55 years, and it's a cycle of addiction. So I lost my mom through that cycle of addiction recently in September of 2023. I lost my brother to a fentanyl overdose, leaving me with three of his young children. 6 years earlier in the same apartment, his wife overdosed in that apartment. So I know addiction. It's touched me personally. It's hard, but I've had the luxury of being in law enforcement since 1990. And I think what drove me to public service was those experiences and the fact that I felt that as a public servant, I could be the difference in my communities. So as chief of police here, I'm responsible for 8 counties, 85 plus cities, 3,000 square miles. And we provide transportation. And transportation is an important, vital need for members of our minority communities. It provides opportunities. We have to break down invisible barriers in providing these opportunities to people that don't have other means of transportation. So as a new chief in Metro Transit going on 18 months here, it's been my mission to change our relationships and the perception of how our communities receive us, understanding that there's a much bigger picture and mission at hand.
I've got to say, thank you for sharing that with me, with us, with the community. It is so important for us to know that we have people with lived experience in leadership roles representing our communities. So thank you, and I appreciate you. Can you share what are some of the major issues that Metro Transit is working on these days?
Yes. So we're working on three major factors here that are affecting our community within the transit community. But I want to point out that, you know, Metro Transit is a small window to larger societal issues that we're experiencing, not only in Minnesota, but across the country at this time. And that's homelessness, the mental health crises, and more important, the fentanyl use, substance abuse. Those are three major issues that find themselves within our transit issues. And we work with our partners throughout the state and region to be great partners. That's something that we want to focus on. Fortunately for us, we have a homeless action team that helps out with these issues. We've partnered with community-based partners as well. And recently, as of this year, we just enacted the TRIP Agents, Transit Rider Investment Program, which is state legislation mandated as of June of last year. So in December of 2023, we sent out our community service officers to start enforcing fare inspections, which were civilianized. It no longer requires a sworn police officer to conduct this kind of enforcement, which is great because it creates that distance between us and the communities and our commuters from a law enforcement perspective. We want to be an avenue to resources. We want to be public servants because that's what we do. We are public servants that provide a service based on the communities that need us. The police are the people and the people are the police.
Thank you. You mentioned the Transit Assistance Program. Can you tell us more about how that works and what it is?
Absolutely. So a Transit Assistance Program is very helpful for communities in need that can't necessarily afford the fares. And what we would ask you to do is to go up on our website, metrotransit.org/tap, or if you don't have a computer or access to the internet, We have four locations where you can go to personally, and that's Burnsville Transit Station, the Metro Transit Service Centers in downtown Minneapolis with St. Paul, and the Southwest Transit Station in Eden Prairie. Now, what the TAP assistance program is a reduced fare of $1. And we'll accept any IDs that are used for voting in Minnesota. This includes a utility bill, your lease, student ID, EBT card, or WIC card, and many others. Once you apply, it's good for 1 year. After the 1 year, you have to re-enroll. And family members listed on the approved documents, they also qualify as well. I want to remind people that children under 5 years of age ride for free, no IDs required. For children between the ages of 6 to 12 and seniors 65 and older, they qualify for a reduced fare card that's valid for 10 years or until the youth turns 13 years old. You can order those at any one of our service centers.
You said that valid forms of ID are the same ones that used for voting, so that includes a tribal ID?
Yes, absolutely.
Just want to make sure. Thank you. How does a Metro Transit work proactively to help people feel safe on the buses and the trains?
So as I pointed out in December, what we did is we have several layers of safety now. And this is how we've been successful in reducing crime and increasing ridership. One thing that I required my officers to do prior to my arrival here, they answered calls for services. So when they received the call for service, they will respond, take the report, return back to their vehicles, and resume patrol. What I'm asking them now to do is between those calls for service, I give them a designated geographical area of employment. I expect them to get on a certain stop, ride 3 to 4 stops. In between stops, get out, step off onto the platform, make eye contact with our commuters so that when you go home, you're talking to your families and friends, you're telling them that you have positive interaction with a police officer, and this is what has increased ridership. So we have several layers of safety. That's police officers, community service officers, community-based partners under TSIP, Transit Rider Investment Program. That's our trip agents. We also have the employees, and most importantly, the commuters that come on. We're absolutely safer in numbers. So by taking that proactive position and being out there, this has helped with our safety.
I remember being in a meeting a few years back, and one of the things that I was surprised to learn was that there are crimes that happen on the buses and the trains that people don't report. So what should people do if they see something dangerous or inappropriate on a bus or a train?
So I want you to report every incident. Every incident is absolutely important. It helps us with legislation. It helps us with recruiting more officers, getting more spots for it based on our need for policing. And that's based on reports that are reported. If you fail to report it, we can't meet that demand. But secondly, and more importantly, by you reporting your crimes and your incidents taking place, I know where I can deploy my personnel. Mm-hmm. If you feel unsafe in calling, you always have the option to use our text for safety. And that number is 612-900-0411. Once again, 612-900-0411. Anytime you feel unsafe, you see something suspicious, you witness behavior that's unacceptable, text this number. Use it on the bus, use it in the transit center, on the train, shelter, or any stop. It'll be relayed to our transit control center, known as our TCC, is monitored 24 hours, 7 days a week, and they will deploy police or medics, whatever is needed for that particular call. If you happen to be on a light rail, there's a red marker on top of the train with a number. Please supply that number. Give us as much detailed information as possible, what the incident is, whether they're smoking cigarettes, smoking drugs, what they're doing, and give us a detailed description. I ask for a detailed description because there may be a time delay. And by the time the officers respond to your incident or complaint, you may have already left the train, the vehicle. So please provide us with as much detailed information as possible so that when our officers respond, they can deal with that incident.
That's great. And the text number was, can you repeat that number?
Yes, 612-900-0411. Once again, 612-900-0411.
Thank you. So when and why should people file a police report?
The reason why people should file a police report is because, as I stated earlier, it's important for me so that I know where crimes and incidences are taking place so that I can deploy and focus my resources to those areas. We want to serve our underserved areas, importantly, but we want to serve the whole system comfortably. You should have a free ride, a free and comfortable ride that feels comfortable. We aren't there yet, but we are working hard. We're putting a lot of resources into it. Third-party security, where we can't meet the demand. We still have workforce issues. We're 38% short of where we should be. We're recruiting, but we need you to report incidences so that I can use the resources that I have and I could deploy them smartly.
So I think sometimes people may have questions about jurisdiction. When you file a police report, who handles that?
So we would take these reports. However, we don't have first right of refusal. First right of refusal goes with the local jurisdiction. So if we happen to be in Minneapolis or St. Paul, and I use them because they are major cities, the Twin Cities, they can assess and they can decide whether they want to take that report or not. However, we have conversations with them. We do deal with our incidences so that we can investigate them within our investigations unit.
Okay, thank you. I think at this time, we're going to take a quick segment break and we'll be back and continue our conversation with Chief Ernest Morales III.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. Ho-wah.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune into Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Join the community spirit at Four Sisters Farmers Market, a seasonal hub for cultural placemaking, food access, and indigenous values. Four Sisters Farmers Market has always emphasized their commitment to the community and inclusivity, accepting SNAP and EBT benefits. Stop by and get affordable, healthy, and culturally appropriate local food. Four Sisters Farmers Market is open Thursdays 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. and is located on the American Indian Cultural Corridor off of Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis. Discover more about Four Sisters Farmers Market on their social media accounts.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org.
Let's live and let howl.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis AIR American Indian Relations. And here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Welcome back. We are in conversation with Chief Ernest Morales III with the Metro Transit Police Department. You mentioned how transit, public transportation, is a lifeline for a lot of people. Does Metro Transit support elders and people with disabilities with any programs or ridership assistance?
dedicated to providing accessible bus and rail services for all community members, including those with disabilities. Metro Transit outreach coordinators offer free personalized training and resources on how to ride buses and trains. Outreach coordinators are available to help train customers with disabilities in person and in on location. And topics include trip planning, reading maps and schedules, transferring between routes using park and rides, fare and how to pay, learning about the accessibility features on buses and trains, using the online tools and apps, and riding transit safely. Contact our outreach coordinator at metrotransit.org/outreach. The Limited Mobility Program offers discounted fares for those with disabilities to encourage customers who have a qualifying disability to use regional transit service. You can learn more at metrotransit.org/accessibility. I also want to touch on several other points. Metro Transit also offers customers the free use of AIRA, A-I-R-A. It's an app that connects customers to a live agent for visual interpreting and navigation assistance. Metro Mobility is the door-to-door public transportation system for people with disabilities in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. Customers can call 651-602-1111. Again, that number is 651-602-1111 or 651-291-0904 to schedule their trip. We're also wanting to hear from how we can improve, to request modifications, request materials in alternative formats, or to submit a comment or suggestions. You can contact our customer relations at 612-373-3333. Once again, that number is 612-373-3333, or reach us at metrotransit.org/contact-us.
You know, I think that's amazing. So I grew up in Minneapolis, so I'm an urban Indian, and I rode the bus from the time I was 5 years old. And just now learning that you have outreach coordinators that can help teach people how to ride the buses and the trains, like, I didn't really think about the need for that. But now I'm thinking about how we have a lot of people who come down from different reservations across the country and transplant and move to Minneapolis, and how important that is when you don't know what to expect or even necessarily what to do, or the fact that, you know, you can be asked for where's your receipt, did you pay to ride? I learned something new. So do you do any specific work with the Native community here?
Absolutely. The Native community is near and dear to my heart, especially our Little Earth. We go there a lot. We have a passionate community outreach coordinator who's really supportive of the Native community. We regularly attend the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors meetings, and we love attending the Powwow Ground Open House, which is going to actually be tomorrow. Yeah. And this is an annual event that I had the privilege of attending last year. I'm looking forward to doing it again this year, and just making those connections that are absolutely important.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. I think one of the things that you can add to that list is the fact that our community is so significantly represented in the homeless population. Your HAT team does wonderful work and partners with our outreach workers all the time. And I don't know that that's uplifted enough. I know we've had different events where we were able to have the vehicle actually there so people could actually see what it is and what services people can get from the HAT team. So thank you for that. Is there anything else that you want to mention about Metro Transit or the work that you do, your team does?
So we provide resources within the state of Minnesota, like I said, but we want to be great partners. And, you know, something that I'm looking for is especially in Native community, I mean, if you're looking to start a career in law enforcement, you're unsure where to start, our community service officer pathways programs assist individuals with no law enforcement experience or degree to become a community service officer with the Metro Transit Police Department. Through the CSO Pathways program, participants will have the opportunity to be hired as a community service officer, earn 12 college credits at no cost to the individual, and be prepared for a career in law enforcement. Registration for the 2025 program opens in mid-August. To learn more about this opportunity, you can apply at metrotransit.org/careers-pathways. That's metrotransit.org/careers-pathways. We are continuously accepting applications for full-time officers and community service officers. New officers are eligible for a $4,000 hiring bonus. And lateral officers, those are officers with experience, are eligible for $8,000 lateral hiring bonus. Our community service officers, this is important because not every individual qualifies for financial aid, but if you need assistance, we offer an $18,000 tuition reimbursement program. That means you'll go to college and we'll give you up to $18,000 back just for serving as a community service officer within our police department.
Thank you. I really enjoyed having this conversation with you today. I appreciate you. I appreciate the commissioner of the health department. It matters when people like you in your positions show up in our community. And I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
I look forward to sharing the day with you tomorrow and always being a great partner within the Native American community.
Thank you. So tomorrow is the open house. So, you know, in Minnesota, May is Indian Month, and we are blessed to have so many organizations in Minneapolis where there is an open house almost every day of that month. So we get to eat well during that month. But this year, one open house had to be canceled because of inclement weather. And so the Native American Community Development Institute, American Indian Community Develop, AICDC, American Indian Community Development Institute in Powwow Grounds, they rescheduled their open house for tomorrow. So it will be tomorrow from 11:30 to 2 at 1414 East Franklin with your hosts. And it is going to coincide with the Four Sisters Farmers Market tomorrow. So you'll be able to come, you'll be able to pick up produce, you'll be able to check out a lot of the amazing vendors that we have there. And then we're also going to have live entertainment with the downtown Jada Brown. So I hope to see everybody tomorrow. Delayed, but it's always a good time.
I hope they have the walk-in colon too somewhere. I missed that, you know, where we can go and check out the colon blown up there. That was made famous in that play.
Yeah. Oh, that's the American Indian Family Camp, what, ACAF, American Indian Cancer Foundation. Yeah.
Right. But they had it at the Native American Community Clinic last year at their open house.
Yeah. Well, I know. I was shocked the first time I seen that. It was an experience.
Exactly. I had to walk through twice. Hey, great job. Great job as always. So, you know, so great to hear the great work that's happening in Minneapolis. And thank you again, Christine.
I appreciate this partnership. And like I said, just the ability to bring public officials and have them introduced to our community is important.
This is the Shaw, WAUK. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome comedian and podcaster Jimmy Pardo and EAA Director of Communications Dick Napinski joins the show to talk about one of Wisconsin's favorite events.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9.
Today's WAUK Big Deal of the Day. 50% savings at Delafield Brewhouse. Celebrating their 25th anniversary, stop by and sample in-house brews and seasonal craft beers like the Ice Age Ale. From signature brewtizers like loaded tots and cheese curds to Woodstone pizzas, burgers, and ribs, there's something for everyone to enjoy at Delafield Brewhouse. Go to WAUKradio.com, click on the Big Deals tab, and purchase $40 gift certificates for just $20. Today only on WAUK Big Deals.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming.